Good day, everyone, and welcome to today's PPMD telebriefing. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, the media will have the opportunity to ask questions during the question-and-answer session. Please note this call may be recorded. I will be standing by if you should need any assistance. It is now my pleasure to turn the conference over to Ms. Anita Bose. Please go ahead, ma'am.
Thanks so much. And good morning. Thank you all for joining us today for this telebriefing regarding the first ever rare disease community-initiated guidance submitted to the FDA focused on accelerating drug development for Duchenne muscular dystrophy. Today we're going to start with remarks from Pat Furlong, the founding president and CEO of Parent Project Muscular Dystrophy, which is the organization that convened the broad coalition of Duchenne muscular dystrophy stakeholders to develop this guidance. 20 years ago, Pat's two sons, Christopher and Patrick, were diagnosed with Duchenne. Refusing to accept the idea that there was no hope and little help for families like hers, she founded PPMD, along with other parents, in order to change the course of Duchenne and ultimately to find a cure. Her sons lost their battle with Duchenne in their teenage years, but Pat continues to fight in their honor and for all families affected by Duchenne. We will then turn the call over to a prominent regulatory expert, Dr. Tim Franson, who serves on the steering committee and was instrumental in the development of the document. Dr. Franson has held previous executive leadership roles at Eli Lilly and has also acted as co-chair of the Joint FDA Industry Working Group addressing clinical aspects of the FDA Modernization Act of 1997, including the PDUFA renewal, among his many regulatory accomplishments. And finally, we will also hear from Dr. Neera Gulati, a steering committee member, a board member of Sunil's Light Foundation, a practicing physician, and a mother of a child with Duchenne. With that, I'll turn it over to Pat Furlong of PPMD. Pat?
Thank you. Thanks, Anita, and thank all of you for being here today. Today is a landmark day for PPMD and for the entire Duchenne community. We're so pleased that at our organization's 20-year anniversary, after two decades of hard work and dogged persistence within the policy, legislative, and regulatory arena, we are today able to provide the U.S. Food and Drug Administration the first ever patient-initiated guidance to help accelerate development and review of potential therapies for Duchenne muscular dystrophy. The guidance is a milestone for the community, and we hope that it can show the way for others to incorporate the patient voice, the community's voice, in a well-documented and quantifiable way in pursuit of our common goal, to end Duchenne. Let me start by giving a bit of background on Duchenne. This is the most common lethal genetic disorder diagnosed in childhood. Duchenne is a progressive and degenerative muscle disorder with no cure or disease-modifying treatments available in the United States. Duchenne primarily affects boys and young men and causes a loss of muscle function, wheelchair dependency, and a decline in respiratory and cardiac function. I think it's really important to mention here that 1 in 35 to 6,000 rare live births will be boys with Duchenne. But it's also important to understand that each of those births may affect women as well, and they will become unknown carriers. In my own family, there is no family history, and about a third of the cases of Duchenne are exactly that, without history. Since our founding in 1994, our goal at PPMD has always been to do everything we can to help patients with Duchenne live longer, stronger lives. Today's FDA guidance represents the culmination of 20 years of work to improve care and support the development of needed therapies for Duchenne. PPMD led the effort in 2001 on the MD Care Act, which created Senator Paul D. Wellstone Muscular Dystrophy Cooperative Research Centers. And this act alone resulted in $500 million in research and development for muscular dystrophy. Second only to the cloning of the gene, the MD Care Act was a game changer for the Duchenne muscular dystrophy community. Because of the MD Care Act, we now know so much more about Duchenne and other forms of muscular dystrophy. We've developed patient registries, improved standards of care, and explored clinical outcome measures and biomarkers. This experience in data collection has resulted in greatly improved understanding of the pathogenesis and natural history of Duchenne. The MD Care Act also helped galvanize the biopharmaceutical sector, and we now have a robust therapeutic pipeline focused on different segments of the Duchenne population. Today's guidance also builds on PPMD's effort to shape federal policy that reflects the needs of families living with Duchenne, including the release of Putting Patients First, which calls on the FDA to act more flexibly when reviewing applications for Duchenne therapies. PPMD also ensured that the FDA Safety and Innovation Act of 2012, or FDASIA, responded to the needs of the community. We recently published a groundbreaking benefit risk study which documented and quantified the willingness of families to take and live with risk. You see, patients live with risk and families live with risk and uncertainty from the day their child is diagnosed. In February 2013, the European Medicines Agencies, or the EMA, developed a guideline document focused on the clinical investigation of medicinal products for the treatment of Duchenne and Becker muscular dystrophy. That EMA guidance document was another galvanizing moment for us. We felt that the U.S. FDA should have similar guidance and that we, as a strong patient community, should come together to provide as much input as possible. On December 6, 2013, we convened a national PPMD FDA Duchenne Policy Forum with 20 FDA staff members in attendance, where the community made its needs and preferences in drug development known to the agency. That December 6th policy forum was the initiation of this guidance development process. It established a public-private partnership and clear understanding that, given the unique characteristics of this rare and fatal condition, the Duchenne community would and should provide the agency with critical, quantifiable patient and caregiver insight, insight that could be used to help accelerate the development of safe and effective therapies. In January, PPMD convened a steering committee, which was then organized with seven specific working groups focused on key areas of interest. I'm going to let Tim tell you more about the groups and their imperatives, but I do want to talk a little bit about the unprecedented coalition of organizations that were represented within these working groups. We had over 80 dedicated expert stakeholders working together with one goal in mind, to provide the strongest guidance with the clearest patient voice to the FDA. The 80-plus experts represented many different organizations and perspectives, from parents and patients, medical experts, academics and researchers, the biopharmaceutical industry, and dedicated advocates from across the muscular dystrophy community. We had representatives from the biopharmaceutical companies, including Shire, AstraZeneca, Johnson & Johnson, GSK, Eli Lilly, Prosensa Therapeutics, PTC Therapeutics, and Sarepta Therapeutics. We had individuals from top academic centers such as Johns Hopkins University, University of Pennsylvania, Emory University, University of Florida, UC Davis, as well as representatives from the National Institutes of Health. We had clinicians who see Duchenne patients every day, including Dr. Kevin Flanagan from Nationwide Children's Hospital, Brenda Wong from Cincinnati Children's Hospital, Craig McDonald from UC Davis, and Dr. Richard Finkel from Orlando Children's Hospital. Our working groups included geneticists, regulatory experts, administrators, and parents, and foundations. The community advisory board included patients and family members and representatives from more than 30 family foundations across the United States and Europe. We're so proud of this accomplishment and are truly humbled that so many of you in the community were willing to dedicate time and resources to the development of this important document. So let me talk a little bit about why we believe this guidance is so critical, and right now it's critical. Right now marks a huge moment in time for the Duchenne community. There is a robust pipeline of therapies in clinical development at this very moment. We feel confident that several of these will finalize their clinical programs very soon and be ready to submit to their new drug applications to the FDA. As that happens, as the FDA begins to evaluate new drug applications for Duchenne therapies, we believe it's critical that they take into consideration what patients and parent decision makers value most. We are a community that understands risks. We deal with risk every moment of every day. When your child is living with a rare fatal disease like Duchenne, you find yourself willing to take a significant risk in the hope of modest benefit to function and mobility. We as a community want the FDA to recognize that. Now I'm going to turn it over to Tim Franson, who will focus on the guidance document itself. Tim?
Pat, thanks very much, and thanks all of you for joining us today on this call. I truly believe this guidance is groundbreaking in documenting the Duchenne patient perspective, based on my almost 30 years as a clinical investigator and in industry working with FDA. This is truly unprecedented. So let me walk you through some of the specifics in this document. And first, perhaps it's appropriate to ask, what is a guidance? Essentially, it's a drug development roadmap produced until now by FDA for use by developers. Guidances provide yardsticks for performance in trials and outline shared goals for FDA and industry for data collection and assessment. And now, for the first time, Duchenne will embody the patient-centered expectations and accountabilities in this process, and it will ensure consistency and transparency in development. The document overall provides a much-needed patient perspective in a quantifiable way to help the FDA in its data-driven development processes. This guidance is intended to serve as a focus for continued discussion among the FDA, the medical industry, trial sponsors, the academic community, the patient and caregiver community, and the public. Each section of the guidance includes extensive published or in-press, pre-reviewed and peer-reviewed articles and focus on six areas aimed at overcoming the challenges in trial design and implementation. And those six areas are benefit risk assessment, diagnosis, natural history, clinical trial design, outcome measures and considerations, and non-muscle biopsy-based biomarkers, as well as muscle biopsy-based biomarkers. So a few words on each of these segments, which are important. For benefit risk assessment, providing a community-centered approach for the benefit risk framework, fundamental to the regulatory process, and reflecting the community's tolerance of potential risks or uncertainty of benefit associated with new treatment options is key. The risk-benefit section can really be considered a cornerstone of the guidance. This section encourages the FDA and trial sponsors to engage patients and their families at all stages of trial development and to take into account what they consider acceptable risk in clinical trials. A recent PPMD study published in the journal Clinical Therapeutics shows that parents of children with Duchenne will accept substantial risk when balanced with benefits such as non-curative slowing or stopping of progression of muscle weakness, even with no improvement in life expectancy. The results came from the first ever scientific survey of benefit risk perspectives that PPMD conducted last year involving 120 Duchenne parents. The second section on diagnosis refers sponsors to guidance produced by the American Academy of Pediatrics on a diagnostic algorithm, as well as providing context on diagnostic delay and the importance of genetic analysis using modern technologies, including access to genetic testing, so certainty of diagnosis. Third, with respect to natural history, that section accurately characterizes the clinical course of Duchenne to reflect the timing of the loss of certain abilities based on current medical management practices, including how Duchenne affects cardiac and pulmonary function. Next, for clinical trial designs, outcome measures, and considerations, this material ensures that trials, to the degree possible, are inclusive of Duchenne patients of all ages and disease stages and reflect current best practices. Next, for muscle biopsy-based biomarkers, the section addresses key considerations when performing muscle biopsy, including the ethical imperative to perform them only when needed and provides precautions to assure usable specimens. Sponsors are also referred to an international effort to standardize methodologies and emerging technologies for this work. And final section, non-muscle biopsy-based biomarkers, presents information on exploring the ability to bring non-invasive imaging techniques to replace biopsy, such as MRI, MRS, skeletal muscle imaging, and eventually reach the goal of being a surrogate marker and endpoint for trial treatments. In general, from my experience, guidance documents such as this one can provide predictability and consistency for both the FDA and drug developers, This translates to more timely new drug reviews, with patients then benefiting via earlier access. Our expectation is that, after thoughtful review, the FDA would adopt a large portion of these suggestions into their own guidance. We hope that, like the EMA guidance document from 2013, the FDA also develops its own guidance specifically in this rare disease area based on the input that we, as a community, have provided. Pat talked about the urgency and timing of this guidance. That as biopharmaceutical companies come forward with new therapies for Duchenne, it is imperative that the FDA begin to incorporate key areas of this patient-centered guidance. We also recognize that guidance of this nature has a limited shelf life. We know that as we all conduct additional research and gain new knowledge and new outcome measures, we will need to update this document with relevant and referenceable information that can continue to guide the drug development and approval processes. And now I would like to hand off to Dr. Neera Gulati to provide the parent and community perspective. Neera?
Thanks, Tim. Thank you all for being here today for this unprecedented moment in the Duchenne muscular dystrophy community. I am a practicing physician and mom to Sunil Ram, who is a 17-year-old young man diagnosed with Duchenne at age 3. I am the founding board member of Sunil's Light, a not-for-profit foundation devoted to Duchenne research and expediting effective therapies for Duchenne. As the patient advocate member of the steering committee, I have been involved with the development of this guidance since the beginning. The guidance addresses several pivotal imperatives representing a much-needed shift to patient community-centered research to improve the quality of life for Duchenne patients. Duchenne is a rare disease. In the United States, there are approximately 500 boys born with Duchenne each year. Due to the rarity of the disease, we strongly recommend in this guidance, to the degree possible, inclusion of Duchenne patients of all ages and disease stages. Very young boys are typically excluded from studies because of their inability to cooperate with testing. Older boys are excluded for similar reasons, lack of outcome measures. The DMD community has advocated that potential therapies be evaluated across the spectrum of Duchenne. Drug companies are encouraged to study potential new therapeutics in different age groups and disease stages in order to gain a better understanding of safety and efficacy at all ages and stages. Adhering to limiting inclusion criteria in a rare disease poses a danger to successful recruitment and diminishes what can be learned from outcome assessment. This means creating clinical trials that include boys who can walk and those who can't, young boys and older boys, those with cognitive limitations and those without. We can learn how certain therapies react to patients with different levels of progression and whether treatments that protect skeletal muscle also preserve heart and respiratory function. We believe that within clinical trial design, we need to reduce exposure to placebo for boys with shortened life expectancies. We recognize that the most robust data comes from placebo-controlled trials. However, in order to reduce exposure to placebo, novel trial designs limiting time on placebo should be explored once safety is established and a trend toward benefit is seen. This guidance includes broad representation of Duchenne patients, their families, multiple foundations, clinicians, researchers, pharmaceutical representatives, and regulatory authorities. All were included to make sure that the faint patient voice is heard. Many of our participants are parent-patient advocates because Duchenne patients are young boys and often don't survive into early adulthood. But we were lucky enough to have young adult patients who actively participated in the working groups and on the community advisory board. They provided critical insight into the experiences and perceptions of young adults suffering from this currently incurable disease. The presentation of viewpoints of diverse groups of stakeholders intermingled with the entire spectrum of Duchenne patients, young and old, sends a very strong statement to the FDA and the industry at large. Those most affected by this disease at all ages and stages directly support the accelerated development of safe and effective therapies for all Duchenne patients. We who live with Duchenne hope this guidance greatly amplifies our voices and allows the Duchenne community to have an active role in the development of new therapeutics through collaboration. We represent a rare disease community, one that is all too familiar with risk and heartbreaking symptoms, disease progression leading to loss after loss, and then premature death. As a doctor, I make risk-benefit decisions every day for my patients. I can't do that for my son. No one can. There is no cure and no current therapy that can halt progression of this horrible, devastating disease. Our goal for developing this guidance document is to provide the agency and industry with tools and conversation to usher in a new era of safe and effective therapies for patients with Duchenne. Our hope is that our sons will have access to multiple therapies to stop progression of this terrible disease and ultimately improve the quality and length of our boys' lives.
Thank you so much, Mira, and thanks to all of our speakers for joining us today. I want to now turn it back to the operator, who will provide directions for the media to ask questions.
Certainly. At this time, if you would like to ask a question, please press the star and one on your touchtone telephone. You may withdraw your question at any time by pressing the pound key. Once again, to ask a question, please press the star and one on your touchtone phone. And we will pause briefly for questions to compile. And again, if you'd like to ask a question, that is the star and one on your touchtone phone. And we'll go first to the site of Derek Gingery. Please go ahead.
Hi, thanks for taking my question. Just in going through the entire document, I did notice that it was highly detailed in, you know, describing the biomarkers and the trial designs and a lot of the treatment options and so forth. Was curious if you feel like that could be limiting to industry in terms of coming up with, you know, new treatments for the disease. I know a lot of times FDA tries to write their guidances with a little bit of vagueness in them, just so they don't feel like they're, you know, kind of shoehorning everyone into the same, you know, in one direction.
Thanks, Eric. This is Pat Furlong. To the greatest extent possible, first of all, we set standards about writing this guidance, and the standards involved that the references contained within the document would only include published evidence or papers that were approved or accepted for publication. I don't think the guidance is in any way limiting to sponsors. I in fact, think it's a broad representation in terms of, I think you're probably referring to dystrophin as a potential surrogate. I think we all agree that as parents and patients that if dystrophin is absent and now present, that's probably a good sign in the pathophysiology of disease. So we're hoping that this is not limiting, in fact, really further explains the necessity to, in some cases, restore dystrophin, and the fact that parents, again, feel that that is a positive sign. Clearly, we need better biomarkers in terms of other biomarkers for other types of therapies. And so we feel the document is quite well represented and to the fairest extent possible represents what we know now in an evolving area of certainly methodologies to examine dystrophin.
Pat, this is Tim. I would just add, I agree with what you've said. I think we're thrilled with the FDA's receptivity to this process. Again, it's unprecedented. And with respect to the concern about any limitations, FDA has the judgmental latitude now to review and decide what to preserve. But again, this was written with the intent of providing a level playing field for all parties so that no company or FDA would be advantaged or disadvantaged, but use the best possible practices and current information.
And once again, if you'd like to ask a question, that is the star and one on your touchtone telephone.
Jessica, let me jump in with a question for Pat and Tim. Can you guys tell us a little, you know, what has the FDA committed to do with the guidance document? And what will PPMD do to ensure that the agency moves this forward?
I'm happy to take that as well. So Dr. Woodcock agreed to open a document for the docket for the guidance, and that follows a specific process, which we have done. So we now expect that the FDA Division of Neurology will review the document and subsequently hold an open meeting to discuss questions or clarify specific issues within this document. So we're hopeful that this meeting will be scheduled a little bit later this year. At least by the end of the year, we're hoping it's scheduled. And we expect and anticipate that the FDA will issue their own guidance sometime in 2015. So that's what we're expecting, and that's what we really heard from the meeting with Dr. Woodcock some time ago.
Yeah, I would agree, Pat. And I think further, we have every reason to expect they will be timely and straightforward. They have been they meaning FDA, have been very open and very supportive in the interactions. We really don't have any precedents to go on, of course, because until this past year or so, when the FDA Good Guidance Practice Transparency Group invited parties from outside the FDA to generate these kind of drafts for FDA consideration, it hasn't happened. So there's no prior precedent for us to look at and say this is predictive of how they'll handle it. So it's exciting in many ways.
Yeah, definitely. How, Tim, just as a follow-up, how does this draft guidance compare to what the EMA has issued?
Well, there are some important differences. One is, of course, that the EMA guidance addresses Becker muscular dystrophy as well as Duchenne. Second, there is probably less on some of the surrogate measures, and it does not incorporate a lot of the diligent referencing and expert review that the PPMD constituted group has provided. And Pat, I would invite your comments on this as well, since you've worked directly with the EMA folks.
So the EMA draft guidance, to a large extent, was drafted without the input of patients and the community. And this was, once their guidance was released last spring, that was followed up by a meeting in London that was held by TREAT-NMD but incorporated the community as well. And that was to respond to some of the questions that we found within the guidance itself. We're now waiting the EMA to further release their guidance after the London meeting and certainly written documentation to go in to the FDA to the EMA process. So I think the differences are specific to, this is a very reference document. This is a comprehensive community-based document with over probably 200 individuals participating in, from the Community Advisory Board to the Steering Committee and all their working groups. So we feel this is a more comprehensive and well-documented guidance. And clearly, it has been a year, and the field of Duchenne muscular dystrophy is evolving constantly, and we're thrilled to see the speed at which it is moving. So I think that this is an update to the document as well. So I think there are several differences.
And Pat, you talked a little bit about surrogate biomarkers. What is PPM doing exactly to help develop and validate a surrogate biomarker for Duchenne?
So we certainly support the development of surrogate biomarkers in Duchenne in a number of ways. In 2010, the NIH held a meeting to discuss antisense oligonucleotides in particular. And we have asked the division of NIAMS, which is arthritis and musculoskeletal, to consider another meeting, a follow-on meeting, based on the knowledge that has been gained since 2010 to talk about where we are now and what we need to know or do, and with the methodologies around understanding dystrophin expression. So we've agreed to financially support that meeting, and we're looking forward to it, to seeing that occur before the end of the year, hopefully. We also have provided support to the University of Florida in Gainesville to establish MRI as a surrogate endpoint. This has been further supported by NIH grants along the way, but we will support the academic community in any way to develop biomarkers. In addition, we have a collaboration with a company called SomaLogix out of Boulder, Colorado, and this is to identify serum biomarkers. The Department of Defense is also supporting the development of biomarkers. We feel that this is an important piece and certainly would facilitate and accelerate therapies for Duchenne.
Great. So I think, unless there are other questions, I think we're going to wrap up for the morning.
We currently have no further questions at this time, ma'am.
Great. So I just want to thank our three speakers, Pat Furlong, Dr. Tim Franson, and Dr. Neera Gulati. Thank you so much for your time. For anyone that's interested in the guidance document, please go to our website, parentprojectmd.org/draft-guidance, and you can see the entire document there. And let us know if you have any other follow-up questions. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.